What was that? Oh, hello. Who's that? Who are you? You sound like it's an elephant. It's an elephant. It's an elephant in the room.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only and represents the individual opinions of Dr. Dimitri Bick and his guests. It does not constitute the practice of medicine or other professional healthcare services and should not be taken as medical advice or an establishment of standard of care. No guarantee is given regarding the accuracy of any statements and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult your healthcare professional for any medical questions.
Welcome to the Psych Effect Podcast. I'm your host, Dimitri Bick. So if this is the first time you've ever joined us, welcome. If this is not the first time you've joined us, then you may notice a difference in what's going on here, but that's okay. So I guess it's important to sort of address the elephant in the room because there is going to be a bit of a change for this show moving forward. So what is the elephant in the room? You might have noticed a bit of a difference in the voices that you are hearing or not hearing. But what was that? Did you hear that? What was that? Oh, hello. Who's that? Who are you? You sound like it's an elephant. It's an elephant. It's an elephant in the room. Oh, hi. Hi, elephant. Are you, I guess I'm addressing the elephant. Okay, well, while you're here, elephant, let's address you. Let's talk about you and what you're doing here. Why is there an elephant in my room? But anyway, if you've been with us before, you may have noticed that there were more people on this show. But yeah, yes, that's right. There were more people. There were more hosts. At the show's inception, which was over a year ago, we had at least two of us. There was me and Steph. And then we added Suzanne. But, you know, things change and people move on and priorities change. And that is no longer the case anymore. So it's really going to only be me from now on. And that's okay. Right. All right. Yeah, I get it, elephant. By the way, what should I call you? Elephant. Gratitude? Gratitude. I call you gratitude. Gratitude the elephant, everybody. In the world of podcasting, sometimes you just got to kind of put forth your best foot. And sometimes, you know, like, you know, people have things to do and other things to take care of. And for some people, this is not what they want to do or can do. And it's okay. It's not a problem. But this show is going to move forward. And I appreciate everything that Steph and Suzanne did, but they're no longer here. I'm here now, and the show is going to move forward with me and, I guess, the elephant, me and the elephant. Me and Gratitude, the elephant, are going to move forward with the show. So thank you, Gratitude. We'll be seeing more of you, will we, I guess? Okay, we'll be seeing more of Gratitude, the elephant. I do want to point out that since it's going to be me, we're going to expand. I guess I'm going to expand what I'm going to be talking about. We started this show as a sports psychiatry show, and it's always sort of been that way. And I love sports, and we're going to keep talking about that. But I wanted to sort of expand it beyond that. So we'll be talking more about other things beyond sports. And today we're going to end up talking about what Bill Maher said. And we're going to end up talking a little bit more about celebrities and politics and things outside of that. And so I wanted to get into a little bit about what I am and am not going to be able to say. I am going to tap the edge of Goldwater. Goldwater is that nasty little ethics code that people like to hang over psychiatry and psychology and what they think we are and are not allowed to say. I will say up front, in case anybody that is super important that wants to impeach me in the future is listening to this, that I'm not going to diagnose anybody here. But I am going to toe the line on a lot of these issues. And it may come across that way, that I'm going to be diagnosing people. But I'm not. I'm not diagnosing anybody on this show. I'm not going to do that. But I am going to get close to that line, because I think we have a responsibility as psychiatrists and psychologists to inform people. And I don't think you can inform people without towing that line. And I think that we as a field have gotten very afraid of getting near this line because of Goldwater. And we are slapping people's wrists a lot when they get near this line because we're afraid of it. And I think we're afraid of a boogeyman that doesn't exist. And so I'm not afraid of that boogeyman. And whenever we do get close to that line here, I keep saying we, like there's more than one person here. I guess I'm used to it. But I'm going to get, whenever I get close to that, I'm going to keep repeating the Goldwater thing over and over again and mentioning it. So you're going to keep hearing that over and over again. So get used to that. I hope you don't get bored of it. And as I say that, so let's get into this thing with Bill Maher after this break, with me in gratitude.
Welcome to the Bar Banter Podcast. I'm Travis Jennings, and along with my three hilarious friends, we debate and solve the questions that no one dares to ask. Questions like, what is the best Starburst flavor? Does the person in the middle seat get both armrests? And which Muppet would make the best assassin? If you're looking for a podcast that will make you laugh hysterically or scream in your car with rage, we have the show you didn't know you were irrationally passionate about. Join us for new episodes every Wednesday wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on the socials at @_barbanter. And remember, this is our podcast, and you're just along for the ride.
All right, I don't know how many of you guys watch the Bill Maher show real time. This is something I used to watch regularly. I've kind of fallen off a bit here and there, but I do watch clips on YouTube now pretty regularly because I think he's funny to a degree. Let's be real. He needs an audience. I don't know if you watch some of the COVID shows when he didn't have an audience. His jokes fell flat a lot of the times. But when he has an audience, he really comes alive. His audience really kind of picks him up. But aside from the jokes and whether or not he's funny, I think he's relevant and he's good. And whether you agree with him or not, and I tend to agree with a lot of the stuff that he says, not everything, and there's a lot I don't agree with, but I think he makes good points. 2 weeks ago, he did his new rules, and at the end of the new rules, if you don't watch him, he does like the final new rule where he like does a soliloquy for like, I don't know, 6 or 7 minutes on one specific topic. And the last one he did was on mental health and how freaking out over your mental health is bad for your mental health. And he laid out a bunch of statistics. And so I want to go through those statistics because a lot of them are, well, they're newsy, and he uses them to make a point. And the point is not entirely incorrect, but he uses these newsy statistics to make that point. And what I don't like about these kinds of shows is these showrunners, they go in and they probably type in, depression rate, or get me depression rate or something like that. And they find the one that makes that's the most sensational. And then they get a slide and they write in one line without looking any deeper into what that statistic actually was, because that statistic may not actually be that impressive, but it looks impressive when you put it on a slide. And then they make a bigger point about that. So let's do that. Let's go into it and to look over the statistics that he points in, and then the point that he's making about it, because I think the point is not so bad, but let's do the statistics first. Anyway, this is the opening of that new rule, in case you missed it.
And finally, new rule, being obsessed with your mental health is bad for your mental health. I've been thinking a lot lately about a puzzle many are struggling with. Why are Biden's approval ratings so low when things are generally pretty good?
All right, so obviously, this is a politics show, right? So he's linking it to politics, right? Biden's approval ratings are bad, and that's because everyone's depressed. But it's not about politics, right? Biden's approval ratings would be in the toilet if everyone is a millionaire. Half of the people would hate Biden if everyone was a millionaire and everyone had golden toilets, because half of the country hates the guy because he's a Democrat. And if Trump was president, half of the country would hate him because he's a Republican. Like, his approval rating has nothing to do with depression rates. And I keep telling people this all the time. Who are like, oh my God, like the economy, bro. And it's like the economy sucks. And I'm like, God, it's nothing to do with the president, man. Like, whether you hate the president or not, like, has nothing to do with like whether you're going to like the economy or not. Because like, if Biden's president right now, right, and the economy's great, you're still going to hate Biden, right? And if the economy sucks and Biden's president, you're still going to hate Biden and blame him, and you're not going to give him credit for the economy. And if Trump was president and the economy's great, you're going to say, look, Trump made the economy great. And if the economy sucks and Trump's president, you're going to be like, well, it's not his fault, right? So it's completely irrelevant who the president is for your opinion on the fucking economy, okay? So like, stop freaking talking to me about the president when you're completely biased. Like, you can't have conversations with people about politics when their brain is like infected by like conspiracies and idiocies. And his thing about like being obsessed with mental health is bad for your mental health. Yes, but that has nothing to do with Biden's approval ratings. Anyway, that rant is coming back for you, baby. Because I got more on that in other shows, but not this one. So let's move on. Here's some of the statistics. This is just the beginning of them.
Let's look at the numbers. Almost a third of American adults have reported a depression diagnosis at some point in their life. And while depression is, of course, a very real thing, it's also true that earlier generations never suffered from the expectation that you're supposed to feel good all the time. 1 in 8 adults are on antidepressants. And that doesn't include the ones who steal them from their kids.
Okay, that's actually pretty funny. So let's look at the statistics. If you're listening, I'm going to read it to you. The slide that pops up is U.S. adults who report having been diagnosed with depression, ... So there's missing, has reached 29%. That's Gallup. And the one after that is, even before the emergence of COVID, 1 in 8 Americans was taking an antidepressant drug. That's New York Times. So what did I do? I went and I looked up where he got these from. So the first statistic, U.S. adults who report having been diagnosed with depression has reached 29%, is from a Gallup article. U.S. depression rates reach new highs, May 17, 2023, by Dan Witters. It's a Gallup article, and it's the first paragraph. So they didn't really even go very deep into this article. Okay. The first paragraph, the percentage of U.S. adults who report having been diagnosed with depression at some point in their lifetime has reached 29%. That's where he got that line from. Now listen to that sentence. The percentage of U.S. adults who report having been diagnosed with depression at some point in their lifetime has reached 29%. Who report at some point in their lifetime. So what that number is Gallup went out and asked people, have you ever been diagnosed with depression in your life? A third of people say, yeah, I've been diagnosed. But by who? What does it mean to be diagnosed? Do you actually remember that it was depression? Like, it's a survey. Like, people's memories aren't that great. So this is not really that, like, accurate, I would say, that 30% of people think that they've been diagnosed with depression at some point in their lifetime.
From their kids.
Excuse me. So I don't really put a lot of credence into this. And in fact, if you really look at the prevalence rate of depression in the United States, the NIMH is a pretty good idea. And the NIMH has the past year prevalence data for major depressive episode, which is required to have major depressive disorder. From 2001, the estimated prevalence of major depressive episode among U.S. adults aged 18 and older in 2021, 21 million adults, which is 8.3% of U.S. adults. So that's much less than 30%. Now that, again, that's not lifetime as this poll is. It's 1 year prevalence, but it's significantly less, okay? Now, if you continue on with this article that he got in Gallup, the next line is, the percentage of Americans who currently have or have been treated for depression has increased to 17.8%. That's probably accurate because the prevalence of depression in general is somewhere in the teens, but it's usually in the low teens, okay? Now, COVID did increase that number. In my practice, I can say that COVID increased rates of anxiety and depression. A lot of people came in with more anxiety and depression. So I'm not minimizing depression. I'm not. There has been an increase in depression. But what I'm saying is it's not 30%. Okay. All right. So the second statistic here, and this is news. Like this isn't, I'm not going to do everything is fake news. It's fake news. But this is what news does right here. Even before the emergence of COVID, 1 in 8 Americans was taking an antidepressant. This is how news, I hate using the word distorts, but this is exactly what it is, okay? This is from a New York Times article. November 8th, 2022, the New York Times article is, antidepressants don't work the way many people think. And again, this is from the first paragraph. These showrunners didn't even bother continuing on beyond the first paragraph. The first paragraph. Even before the emergence of COVID, 1 in 8 American adults was taking an antidepressant drug. According to one estimate, that number rose to 18.6% during 2020. So this article from the New York Times is getting this statistic from a study, okay? And I went and I looked up the study that it got this from. The study is from the National Center for Health Statistics. Antidepressant use among adults, United States, 2015 to 2018, okay? The first line of this under key findings, during 2015 to 2018, 13.2% of adults age 18 and over use antidepressant medications in the past 30 days. Okay, now let's do some math here. I don't know if people like math or not, but let's do some math. When you take 1 and divide it by 8, the number you get is 0.125, which is 12.5. percent. 12.5%, 13.2%, yes, that's 1 in 8. Okay. 1 in 8 sounds very impressive. It's very terrible. Oh, 1 in 8 people. But when you say it as a percentage, 13.2%, 12.5%, not quite as impressive, right? Yeah, right? Not as impressive. But when you put it in an article and you want to impress people, you don't say 13.2% because people don't think that's a big number. But 1 in 8, that's impressive. And this is news, right? This is the way news distorts numbers to make them sound more interesting than they actually are. When you say, even before the emergence of COVID, 1 in 8 Americans was taking an antidepressant drug, sounds more impressive than saying during 2015 to 2018, 13.2% of adults age 18 and over used antidepressant medications. That doesn't sound very impressive, and it's not going to sell you an article. But that's the statistic he's using, but he's saying it in a more impressive way. Okay. All right. So not so impressive, 1 in 8 people, when you say it scientifically. Okay. So, but again, this is an overall more important point that he's making at the end. So let's move on to the next set of statistics.
In 2022, the CDC released the results of a survey on teen mental health, and over 40% said they feel persistently sad or hopeless. And antidepressant use among young males is rapidly rising, unlike their dicks. Now, Without a doubt, antidepressants can be life-saving for those who need them. But here's the thing. About three-quarters of Americans who are on them haven't been diagnosed with depression at all. They just want a magic pill.
Okay, so let's go into these statistics. 42% of students felt persistently sad or hopeless. This is from, he said, the slides of CDC. Well, the CDC thing he's referring to here is a youth risk behavior survey, the survey, data summary and trends report, 2011 to 2021. All right. This thing is 89 pages long. I don't think these guys read this, to be honest. I think they probably, I don't know, they probably found this online, saw the statistic online, and just put it on the slide, okay? But I found it in there, and it's in there. This is legitimate. It's a statistic in this study. But you got to take this into account. Like, they took the statistic out of an 89-page report without taking into account 42% of students felt persistently sad or hopeless in the context of socioeconomic status, you know, social determinants of mental health. Like, yeah, if you just take a statistic, 40%, without taking into account their social situation, it looks really bad. But if you take into account certain factors, that number starts to have context of why 40% of students feel sad and hopeless. You know, if they can't get a meal, you know, or they can't get their books, then yeah, like, it's not just, you know, their iPhone doesn't work. Like, there may be a reason for that, right? And he's just like, oh, 40% of students are sad and helpless. Oh, poor babies. Like, no, there's a reason for that, okay? The next statistic, among men, the increase in antidepressant use since 2017 is 44%. The reference here is Kevin Drum. Kevin Drum is, I never heard of this guy, but apparently he's a journalist, and he writes a blog. And the blog that this came from was something called Why Are White Women So Depressed, which I think is hilarious because I wonder the same thing. And it's from a blog, his blog, Kevin Drum's blog, March 4th, 2024, Why Are White Women So Depressed? A recent article in Pediatrics reports that antidepressant use has increased substantially among young adults. And then it gives the reference. Among men, the increase since 2017 is 44%. Among women is 58%. And so I went and I looked up this article. And when you read through the article, I don't see 44% anywhere among young men. There is, among young men, yes. There is one statistic in a table here. It says change from 2016 to 2022, ages 12 to 17, the number of dispensed antidepressant prescriptions, which means greater than one, is 43%, and ages 18 to 25 is 47%. But the statistic on his slide is among men, the increase in antidepressant use since 2017 is 44%. Among men. And in the blog is among men, the increase is 44%. But if you take men as a whole in this slide, in this study, the actual study itself, men percent increase from 2016 to 2022, it's 33%. So I don't know where they're getting this 44% from. And I read the study and 44% is not in here. So I don't know where that number came from. In Kevin Drum's blog. So then let's move on to the next statistic, which is 73% of American prescribed antidepressants don't even have a diagnosis of depression. This is another New York Times article, which is published April 21st, 2022, and was updated June 22nd, 2023. It's called How Much Do Antidepressants Help, Really? And this was in that article. The line in the article is, this is worrying. Here it is. Clinical trials suggest that although antidepressants do improve depression symptoms over the first few months, their benefits are modest and are much less pronounced among people with mild depression compared with those with severe depression, which is true. True. This is worrying considering that according to one study, 73% of Americans prescribed antidepressants don't even have a diagnosis of depression. So where is that one study? Well, I found that study. That study is published in Substance Abuse and Mental Health by Raman, I'm going to butcher this guy's name, Majtabai, I'm sorry, and Mark Olfson. Proportions of antidepressants prescribed without a psychiatric diagnosis is growing. This is legit. This is actually a legit statistic, and it is true. This is from the abstract. Our analysis found that between 1996 and 2007, the proportion of visits at which antidepressants were prescribed but no psychiatric diagnosis were noted increased from 59.5% to 72.7%. And I've been saying this for a while, actually. People were complaining about psychiatrists prescribing too many antidepressants. Man, psychiatrists are not the problem here. And like the people that are prescribing the antidepressants are the primaries. The primaries are the primary people that prescribe antidepressants. And this study proves that these prescriptions are coming from mostly non-specialists. They're diagnosing quote unquote depression, or they're not even diagnosing depression and they're just throwing medicine at people because they're coming in and saying, I'm sad. And that's not depression. And I will tell you that people have come into my office and said that they feel sad, and I have told them, you don't need an antidepressant, you need a therapist. And people have gotten angry at me and have left angry, and that is okay. Sometimes you don't need medicine, you need someone to talk to and to learn some skills, and that is okay. And that brings me to the last part of his new rules, which is this part.
Every bad feeling isn't a disease, and Americans really need to stop pathologizing everything. No one's just sad anymore. They're clinically depressed. They don't merely worry, they have chronic anxiety. Do you like things neat and organized? That's OCD. You're bummed when it's cold out? Seasonal depression. Hate being alone? Separation anxiety. Bored? That's ADHD. Shy, social anxiety disorder. Why? Because you don't want to go to the office party? Nobody does. Best case scenario, you have too much fun and it leads to getting fired. Are you moody? No, you're bipolar. And some people are bipolar. And some people are on the spectrum. But sometimes on the spectrum is just a hall pass for being a jerk.
I know who he's talking about.
I'm clinically an asshole. Nothing I can do. Yes, you are on the spectrum, but so is everyone else alive. That's why they call it a spectrum. And it's not noble to glom onto the soft end of it. PTSD is for people who fought in Iraq, not for people who want to bring their dog on a plane.
All right, look. Here's the thing. He's right. Okay. And you may hate Bill Maher, and that's fine. You can hate Bill Maher, but he's right. We are over pathologizing normal behavior. And I'm going to take it a step further and say we're under pathologizing abnormal behavior. And I don't know if I should do this now or I should save that for another podcast. I probably should save that for another podcast, but we are over-pathologizing. Let's stick with this part right here. We're over-pathologizing normal behavior. You can't just be sad anymore. You have to be depressed. You can't just be anxious anymore. You have to have an anxiety disorder. People have gotten to this point now where if you have a symptom, and this is not just psychiatry, by the way, this is for all of medicine. If you have a symptom, if your stomach hurts, it's cancer. If you have chest pain, it's a heart attack, because WebMD and Google, I call GoogleMD, have ruined everything now. And people have the right to check these things, but The problem here is that people don't know how to use that information. It's like having a car, right? Everyone has a car, or most people do. And you open the hood and like, wow, this cool engine. And then like, you get like a rattling and stuff. And then you go look up what that rattling means. And it says, well, this is the problem. And you're like, oh, well, I know how to fix that because I watched a video on it. Okay, but this is a sophisticated BMW. Like, you can't fix that. You're not a mechanic, all right? And you can't diagnose it because you don't have the equipment to do that. And you don't have the knowledge. You may know, or you may think you do, that this may be the problem because, like, you watch the video and are like, well, this is what the video says it could be. But you don't have the understanding to know how to use that information. Okay. And yes, that sounds like an asshole, but the problem is that people don't have the, when they look things up on like, you know, Google and things like that, they don't have the knowledge to know how to use that stuff. And we are under pathologizing abnormal behavior. You got people out here believing in conspiracy theories. There are people that believe that there's human sacrifices that's going to happen on Monday during the eclipse. And we think that that's a completely normal thing because there's a bunch of people that believe in that. And that is abnormal behavior that we think is completely normal. But no, that is not normal behavior. We should pathologize that. But as a psychiatrist, APA thinks that that's normal. We call those things like extremely overvalued beliefs and things like that. No, those are delusions, and we don't call them that. And that's a bad thing, and we don't call them that. That's a bad thing. But that's a completely separate, I think, you know, a delusion. I need to do a delusion episode on the philosophy on delusions and things like that. But anyway, I'd love to hear your opinions on that. What do you guys think? Do we overpathologize normal behavior or do we not? Mental health tip of the daytime.
Day full of hiccups? Need a shake up? Listen up. It's the Psych Effect Podcast Mental Health Tip of the Day.
The Mental Health Tip of the Day is still brought to you by nobody. Even after being off for 3 weeks, it's still brought to you by nobody. And even as a solo host, still brought to you by nobody. But the mental health tip of the day today is surround yourself with people that appreciate the things that you do for them. Otherwise, you might find yourself being resentful. And that's not what you want to do. That's what you want to be. You want to be grateful. Gratitude. Thank you, gratitude. Okay, all right, thank you. That's what you want to be. You want to be grateful. So surround yourself by people that appreciate the things that you do for them. So that's your tip of the day. That's your mental health tip of the day. Thank you, everyone, for joining me for the Psych Effect. Remember, like, follow, subscribe. Leave a written review on Apple, Spotify, Google, and I will see you next week for the next show. All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.
The previous podcast is for general informational purposes only and represented the individual opinions of Dr. Dimitri Bick and his guests. It does not constitute the practice of medicine or other professional healthcare services and should not be taken as medical advice or an establishment of standard of care. No guarantee is given regarding the accuracy of any statements, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult your healthcare professional for any medical questions.